Pozdrav svima i dobrodošli u 12. epizodu podcasta Kolektiv. Ovo će biti nešto drugačija epizoda, budući da ćemo ju premjerno održati na engleskom jeziku. Razlog tomu je što u njoj sudjeluju stručnjaci iz različitih dijelova Europe, preciznije iz Engleske, Portugala i Nizozemske. Suradnja je nastala tijekom provođenja projekta U3 Digital, a koji je bio usmjeren razvoju Europskog okvira za digitalne kompetencije predstavnika organizacija civilnog društva i društvenih poduzeća. Izrađeni su bili online i offline materijali i alati za samoprocjenu i razvoj digitalnih kompetencija, tako da ako vas nešto više zanima o tom projektu, odite na stranicu u3digital.com. U ovom podcastu ćemo razgovarati sa Todd Foster, istraživačkom suradnicom iz Center for Voluntary Sector Leadership and Bristol University School of Education, Ademarom Agijarom, izvanrednim profesorom s Fakulteta inženjerstva na Porto Universityu, i sa Gerlinde Schmidt, projekt menadžericom Euclid Networka iz Haga. Dakle, obradit ćemo teme digitalne transformacije, zašto je u današnje vrijeme potrebno strateški pristupiti digitalnim promjenama unutar organizacije, kako učinkovito koristiti digitalne alate, koji su sve rizici, o kakvim etičkim principima treba voditi računa i o drugim sličnim temama. Nadam se da će vam biti korisno i uživajte u nastavku. As I mentioned in the introduction, Todd and Ademar and Gerlinde are with us today. Hello, everyone. And once again, thank you very much for responding to the invitation to this podcast. I know how busy you all are, but also I know that your contribution on this topic will be significant and great, with the hope that we will somehow encourage organizations from Croatia, but Serbia and also Bosnia and Herzegovina to take a journey towards digital transformation. So once again, thank you.
Thanks, Bruno. It's great to be here.
Let's start from scratch. In recent years, we have witnessed serious social, economical, and political changes that directly affected third sector organizations and increased the need to develop and demonstrate organizational efficiency, both the quality of services in the community, etc. The recent COVID pandemic further highlighted the fundamental needs for third sector or social organizations, so they have to strengthen the capacity for strategic and effective use of digital skills and technologies for the benefit of their target groups. So let's start with you, Todd. Why do you think that it is important to even start the digital change in a planned and deliberate manner in a nonprofit civil society organizations? And where even to begin?
Thank you. Well, I think for a start, everybody, as you say, is under pressure. And money is short in the sector. So number one, perhaps, is to become more efficient so that more of the resource that organisations have can be devoted to their social mission, as opposed to what we could call the back office functions, just running the organisation. So there are a lot of digital tools that can help with that. But second, there are ways in which, by becoming a more digital organisation, you can actually work smarter in your social mission as well, whether that's involving volunteers, if you have them, if you're that kind of organization, or whether that's enticing members of the public to engage with you more. There are lots of reasons to do with what your organization is about and what its aim is that make it important. And in the pandemic, we did some research at the beginning of this project, and found that organizations had very quickly gone through a rapid digital evolution that meant that they ended up with lots of tools that were useful to get over this problem of the pandemic, but weren't necessarily fitting in well with each other. And it caused a problem where now a lot of organizations are using a lot of digital tools, but they're not necessarily working in an effective way together, and they don't necessarily work for everybody in that organization. So one thing I would say about where to begin is to just take stock of where you are now and how can we develop a digital program for the organization that really meets people where they're at now. It's no good doing something whizzy with bells and whistles if actually where people are at is they need something quite basic. So taking stock and working out what your organization needs and what's going to work for all your different kinds of stakeholders, I think, is a really good place to start. But I think one of the most important things is to just have a vision of where you want your organization to be and what you actually want a digital strategy to do for you. What do you want to achieve by moving on with this and investing your time and effort in becoming a more digital organization?
Yes, I agree, Gerlinde, what do you think? What should we take into account when introducing digital tools to the organization?
So I'm going to just continue as Todd already introduced, right? She was referring to taking stock about what the organization needs and what organizations need to also keep creating social impact, but also where do you envision yourself, right? And one aspect, I think, about, starting to formulate a digital strategy or a path towards transformation, so to say, I think it's very important that organizations take a look inward, right? What are the worries maybe amongst other employees? What are the shortcomings or skill gaps amongst employees? Maybe some people are a bit more already like handy and know already quite a lot about different digital softwares or hardwares, and others maybe are a bit more resistant. And it's very important that you take both the ones that feel quite comfortable and the ones that feel rather maybe insecure or are a bit more resistant to that digital transformation, that you take both of them onto this journey and make sure everybody feels included and that nobody's really left behind within your team. And that's equally important, of course, if you think about the beneficiaries that that you want to either maybe communicate towards. So this could be your network, but this could be also really the beneficiaries of your direct projects, et cetera. So that you make sure if you now, let's say you move all your operations online, it's very important to think about, okay, will my beneficiaries also be able to access that information, or are we actually without like not unpurposefully actually excluding people by going digital? So there could be like two paths, I think, that need to be taken into account. If your beneficiaries may not be yet, maybe they're also already left behind in the digital transformation. We also see that, of course, happening quite a lot. Then organizations might also want to start a project to build capacity among their stakeholders, for example.
And also strengthening digital capability can contribute to strengthening the social mission, but too much dependence on digital tools can increase social poverty. And after all, this is what we are witnessing right now. Ademar, how do you see the impact of digitization on civil society and organizations? What are the benefits and what are the risks? We mentioned some of them.
So there are many benefits, of course, that the people that like these technologies, that's what they see. But as you said, there are also a lot of problems. And because digital technologies can somehow augment the behaviors, the good and bad behaviors, and the capabilities of the humans and groups and society as a whole, that will create If we had a kind of gap before, this gap can be multiplied by 10, by 100, by several orders of magnitude. So these are the dangers of digital technology. But on the other hand, if I don't see any other way today, so I don't see the world going back soon to ways of not using digital technology. In the last 2 months, not months, 2 months and a half, the world changed with this kind of ChatGPT hype and so on and so on. So many people are thinking differently on how to do their jobs. So the benefits are very high. The challenges or difficulties are even higher because it will explode the gaps that we have already right now in our society. But as I said before, I don't see any other way of not embracing technology, so that you can be more efficient, as Todd said, can be more effective, because actually you can do better, but you can do a better job when doing exactly as you did before. But there's one point that actually is a kind of my passion on every process of digitalization or using digital technologies, let's say, which is you can think in a completely different way. Just you can improve the way you are doing now. You can be better on the way you are doing now. But just think there are many other ways that you don't see immediately that now you can use. Because with digital technologies, we can reach all over the world within 1 second. And so the logistics of our ideas, the logistics of hiring volunteers, of doing this and that, if it is not face-to-face, we can do now, not around me, like 1 kilometer, 10 kilometers, 100 kilometers, but completely worldwide. And if you start thinking on that, wow. So the North Hemisphere and the South Hemisphere will be together again, not because of the culture and the tools we have, but because of everybody is welcome to contribute from wherever they are. So shortly, yeah, of course, there are problems, many, many problems. So what we can do, we should address those problems so that they will not be the worst thing on earth, but actually contribute to something better. So I'm an optimist. Yeah.
I mean, we usually hear all of the benefits of the digital, of transforming to digital, but this podcast will be more oriented on the risks and how to get over them. So as different digital technologies become, let's say, sufficiently powerful and their use increasingly widespread, and people are progressively depending on digital technologies to manage their lives in general, that digital divide intensifies, let's say. Inequalities continue to grow between those who can access and use digital technologies and those who cannot. I think that half of the world's population is not yet digitally connected. And as a direct result, many people are likely to experience social and economic exclusion and marginalization. And Todd, can you tell us something about how to achieve an inclusive, human rights-based and democratic form of digitization that will empower and enable that, rather than restrict and repress?
I think that's a very difficult question, it's going to have a different answer depending on what your organization is, who you're working with, where you're situated. But there are some principles which we could all make work to make it more democratic. The first is maybe to look at what tools you are using and where the flow of benefit from those tools is going. So who is getting your money when you pay for tools, or who is getting other forms of benefit from that? And there are a lot of tools that aren't necessarily the mainstream ones that we've all heard of in our daily lives that are available to use that are perhaps could be said to be slightly more ethical. And so that's the first thing. Another thing is, particularly for organizations that work in the social welfare sector and have one-to-one contact with beneficiaries who might be experiencing digital exclusion, which is getting which could potentially be getting worse for them, and makes it very difficult at times for them to play a full role as a citizen. In those cases, I think when you're thinking about how to get digital, you need to consider your beneficiaries and the people you work with as well as the staff in the organization, as well as any volunteers you might work with. You've got to consider every group of stakeholder and bringing them with you. So if that involves having to do needing to train or work with those people to bring them up to speed, that's something you'll need to address. Mm-hmm. Also, a lot of organizations are actually in a really good position to tackle digital exclusion on a more general level. So they're having trusted face-to-face relationships with people who are excluded. And that interaction that's already established is a great platform from which to tackle digital exclusion. So that's something else to think about. And finally, I'd say it's really important to think about how you can respond to ideas that come from the bottom up. So respond to ideas about how to include people digitally, how to be more democratic in the way you adopt digital tools. Respond to ideas that are coming not just from the top down, but from the people who are out there working with people, from beneficiaries, from people who are personally interested in this field and have done their own research into the ethics of it and, you know, what are going to be a good way forward that's going to operate within the ethical parameters that any third sector organization should be prioritizing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mentioned in the introduction about our U3 digital project that we have several outputs, and one of them is a toolkit on digital skills. And Gerlinde, Gerlinde, can you tell me something about digitization that has been rapidly transforming in the operating space, let's say, of civil society? And on the positive side, many digital innovations have enhanced and strengthened civic space. And can you tell us something about how to use digital tools to fulfill the social mission of the organization, in your opinion?
That's a big question. But
these are all big questions.
Exactly. It's questions we probably answer on the way in the next following years too. Why we have EU Through Digital, why we started EU Through Digital was because we realized the third sector is really not at the level of digitalization where it should be and is at risk of really falling behind if other sectors are moving faster, right? And that will then at one point really hinder their response to crisis, environmental crisis, etc., to their social mission, you could say. And that's why we started EU Through Digital, right? Because we saw, we need to support the third sector in their digitalization in order for them to keep continuing creating impact and possibly scale that, right? So that's our hypothesis a bit there, I guess. And the toolkit was developed really coming from the need of the COVID-19 pandemic. I think the corona crisis was a big moment for everyone to realize, okay, we all need to be able to operate online. We all need to be able to keep our operations in a digital setting. So I think that was a big mind shift in many organizations and really spurred digitalization. But what also happened was that everybody was just cross-using tools. It's really hard to make an informed decision, I think, which software to use, for example, for which services, because there are paid ads. Some solutions pop up first on Google, some don't. Sometimes it's not clear exactly what are the unpaid services, what are the paid service of that software. So making a choice, and also what Todd said, maybe looking at the software and where does, you know, the money go, or using also more ethical tools. Of course, that's even a bigger challenge. Mm-hmm. So this toolkit really looked at the core processes of third sector organizations, and then try to really assign tools that could fit to these processes and make sure to really inform the reader about what is paid and what are unpaid services, what to keep in mind. But what we are really mindful of in this toolkit, and that's really important to say also right now, because we've published the toolkit almost a year ago, that we want to give the reader the possibility to learn about and gain maybe some insights into what to keep in mind when choosing your tools and for which what processes you should also keep in mind, right? So if you talk about data collection, you might as well think about how to communicate your data, or you know, how to make nice graphics with the data, because that's all, it all fits together. It's not enough to have your data in an Excel sheet. But equally important, it's important to know where your data sits, right? Mm-hmm. To be GDPR compliant for an organization that's in Europe, for example. So this toolkit really just starts a conversation, I would say, with the reader, and allows other organizations to start their process. And what's also important to mention is that, of course, tools can vary from region to region. So what might work very well for Germany or the Netherlands might work quite differently in regarding tools in France or the UK. So organizations are also really encouraged to think about which platforms work for them, right, and their fellow organizations.
Regarding the organizational culture and digital competencies that come that may come, digital technologies require a certain financial ability also, people's willingness to introduce changes, and it is done in I think very long-term process. Maybe it would be a good that civil society insists somehow on the provision of continuous digital capacity building for all, to promote greater digital competency and to enable somehow its members to keep a pace of rapid developments in the digital sphere. Ademar, how to support organizations to increase their digital capability? I know another big question, and especially small ones that do not have large resources. And what is the relationship between digitization and organizational culture?
That's a long question. Yeah. So let me think where to start. Maybe to start with the velocity of all of this, right? So I see we were educated in schools, so a formal system. We should all have formal education, and that has a pace that worked very well in the past, so that society doesn't change too much from one generation to the other. So it's a good stabilizer of the society. But moving forward, today, digital disrupts everything within one day to the other, within one year to the other. So pace. So to keep this formal education and informal education and the pace of changes in the world is a challenge for every country, so for every citizen and for every organization as well. So how to cope with this? I think we should combine several layers. So the formal education will stay there to provide stable skills, knowledge, and behaviors in many aspects of our life as a society. But on top of that, we should complement with many other things, like making people aware that ChatGPT, sorry to say this twice in this session, but actually is the hype. Mm-hmm. So to make people aware that ChatGPT will not change their life within 10 years, maybe 1 year. Mm-hmm. So depends on your job. But to make people aware of what is happening, to explain them what is actually happening, because sometimes we think it was too fast. No, this is something that is going on for a while. So to explain what is happening, to make them aware slowly of these changes and the possibilities, the good and bad possibilities of those things, we'll complement the formal education with the informal education. And hopefully those other ways of learning beyond school and beyond our life, because adults one day stop going to the school, but we keep learning. So this attitude of learning all day long and all days in our life, I think it's very important. Not only to learn because the knowledge comes to me or the situations come to me, but to educate everybody, adults in this case, to go and learn instead of doing other things. So basically, I think the way of coping with all these challenges is to have a balance, a nice balance of all types of education we can have, so that we get more aware, get more skill, and finally get more empowerment of what is happening in the world in terms of digital. Because to fight against, it might not be so easy as we could imagine. Of course, we will have some Robinson Crusoe's, digital Robinson Crusoe somewhere in the island without any tech, but that's a way of life. But for the majority of us, maybe we need to face reality and try to be empowered by by what is happening instead of just complaining or being a slave of it, because that can happen as well if we don't get enough education on this.
Your answer can be instead of a conclusion, but we have to conclude with the we have to come back to the digital strategy of each organization in order to implement the digital transformation as successfully as possible. It is necessary to devise a high quality and suitable digital strategy. Maybe we can start with Gerlinde, and I know that a huge question follows again, but what would you single out as some tips and tricks for a strategic approach to developing digital competencies and increasing digital capability of an organization?
A big one, and I think Todd probably has most answers in this room here, but I'm going to try based on the trainings we've done in the past with EU Digital as well, because we've done, maybe for the listeners, we have done trainings in Portugal, Barcelona and Osijek to really see, okay, to support, of course, third sector organizations in starting to develop their own digital strategy, but also to see whether our project was actually meaningful and what are really the needs, and then really adapt that knowledge into our project development. And what I always find very interesting is to, well, take stock actually of, okay, what tools are you already using? Just make it like, just everybody should write down in the team what software they're using, etc., for which processes. Then I think it's really important to map the processes an organization is doing and how these different softwares fit in there, and whether you're actually using them to the max potential or whether you're actually just using ad hoc tools and just have a lot of licenses and you're actually not really sure what data rights are coming with those different software. So I think that's a really good one. Take stock. See what are your employees or even your beneficiaries' needs. And then also, see what works, right? Look at the budget as well you have within an organization. Sometimes it makes more sense to pay it for an application than to just use a lot of free tools, for example, even though there are many great free tools and open access tools, just like Todd already mentioned earlier. And yeah, I think besides that, there's also a lot of support organizations can get, right? The European Commission has put the digital and green transformation or transition as a key priority for the coming years. So there's quite a lot of funding going into that direction. We also see the setup of digital hubs, European digital hubs. So I think there are quite some opportunities for third sector organizations also to move to that, or to move, of course, you can also look at our website and our outputs that we delivered, but there is also external support that you can move towards within your countries.
Thank you. Todd, maybe you.
I would, I think that's everything's brilliant, what you said, Gerlinde. I would also add, think about whether you can create a community of practice around digital, because particularly for small organizations, this is a tough road. It requires high investment, both in time and money, relative to some other tasks that the organization might be involved with. But if you can get support from your peers, other small organizations in your local area, and you can create a community of practice, so you share advice, you share knowledge, and you support one another, then that makes the burden for each organization a little bit smaller. And also within the organization, don't expect everybody to understand every aspect of every digital tool. This is kind of a needs to know basis, and open the doors to people perhaps coming from a surprising place who might have the enthusiasm and knowledge already to help you on this journey.
Thank you. And Ademar, do you have something maybe in conclusion to say regarding the whole topic? Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, just continuing a little what I said, and taking also complimenting the words of Gerlinda and Todd, which I completely agree. And these communities of practice, I see the easiest way, not the easiest, but most effective way of small organizations to get the skills they need. Because we in our project, we have these competencies identified. We will have trainings so that people can do by themselves. The organizations can organize by themselves. Trainers that are excited with the training these kind of organizations to promote these courses and so on. But at the end, this will be good for sure to create awareness, to get people know what they don't know. But during the day, during the week, there will be difficulties. So if we work together with those around us in our organization, in our cities, in our localities about these struggles and how to solve them, if we share this experience, I think it will be a very effective way and actually can scale. So one problem of the training is that how much this scales. If it scales too much, there will be a lot of people not understanding all of it and being bored about the rest of it. If we go to very specific, it will be one-to-one. It doesn't scale as well, so it will be learning alone. But with these communities, usually we have people with similar needs, with similar skills, and it gets much, much easier to get value from each other. But I believe a lot on this social part of sharing experiences so that you can learn faster and better for your case. Maybe it was a long answer.
No,
but
it was a long question.
I'll go for it.
I truly think that we have said a lot of interesting and useful things, and that the listeners will be motivated and inspired to make progress within their organization, or at least that they heard some new information. I want to thank you all once again, and see you and hear you from on another occasion. To everyone who is listening, see you and listen to each other in the next episode. Thank you.